Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast, everybody. This is Steve Kim, your host, and as usual, I have with me here Andy Steiger and Chris Battle.
I'm here, excited to be here.
So am I. It's a beautiful day today.
I know, I'm wearing shorts.
As am I.
And here I am, like, with sweater.
Steve, do you ever wear shorts?
Steve's wearing layers.
I hardly ever wear shorts.
Yeah, maybe. I was just thinking about that. I don't think I've ever seen you in shorts.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Is that an Asian thing, or is that just a Steve thing?
It's just a Steve thing, I think. I'm just more comfortable with jeans. Shorts, I feel a little too exposed.
Chris tries to get some shorts as often as he can.
As early as I can.
He's a shorts guy.
Yeah, I love shorts.
I was thinking about you the other day, Chris. I was thinking about a rope swing.
Oh, man. The rope swing of happiness.
If there is a rope swing... Now, if you're not around British Columbia, I apologize, but in Harrison Lake, there's this rope swing, and it's just glorious.
There's this rope tied to
I can't tell you where it is. I can just tell you that it exists. Yeah, right, Steve, like, you came with us, didn't you?
Yeah, Steve.
So you
Steve
just
was there.
Climb up this huge rock or whatever, and then you climb up this tree that's kind of stretching out over this water.
God gave us that tree. and
it's made perfectly for the rope swing.
And then some glorious soul climbed up it and attached a rope to it.
And then you can just swing
out of the tree.
Yeah, out of the tree into the water. And this is like a good, like,
now, last year I
30
did this.
Foot drop.
Oh, yeah, you can get up there.
And you remember last year I did it and the rope wrapped around my leg as I let go? You remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that.
It was horrible. It was your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, what you would think never would happen? Well, it happened.
I don't think I ever, nor have I since, heard you scream that high.
It was incredibly painful.
We went with Ryan. He broke his thumb.
Yeah, and then a guy broke his thumb. It was great. Yeah. It was a good manly experience.
It was. He took it like a champ.
Seriously, yeah.
Shout out.
Like, Andy, you went into the water, and by the time you came out, I saw these like red marks.
Oh, that's right. It got
my
side too. Yeah, that was awful. Speaking of manly events, by the way, hopefully people will get this in time, but this weekend, we've got a number of great events that are taking place in Toronto and in Barrie. We have the Apologetics Canada East Coast taking place. We'll be doing a number of events out there. In Barrie, we're at Emmanuel Church.
Mm-hmm.
And in Toronto, we're at
Light Presbyterian Church.
Now, that's the same church, by the way, if you've been watching the news, mm-hmm. with the pastor that was arrested in North Korea and is currently imprisoned there,
he's sentenced to hard labor because he said something that was subversive to the state. Because what he said was that Christians, you know, through God's love, can topple the Kim regime in the north, and they took that as a subversive statement. And there, I mean, the state is the almighty being, right?
Yeah.
And so that you say nothing against our dear leader, sort of a thing. And so he's been sentenced.
Isn't it life?
I heard it was 10 years.
Ten years or life? I can't remember.
I thought I heard 15, but I could be wrong.
Oh, okay.
I haven't really.
I'll have to check into that. But, needless to say, this weekend, some great events. You can check us out at apologeticscanadaconference.com. You can get all the details to those events that are taking mm-hmm. place as well. I'll be speaking out there in Toronto and in Barrie.
Is this the manly part of the event?
It is. Jay Warner Wallace is going to be out there as well.
Jim's back.
Yeah. And then, in fact, on the Saturday in Toronto, we have a free debate that's taking place between Tony Costa and Sadat Anwar, I believe is his last mm-hmm. name. That's taking place in Toronto.
And you're moderating.
And I'll be moderating that debate, yeah. So we'd love to see you out. So if you can make it, it's going to be a great event. We'd love to see you out there.
Mm-hmm. And they've done a fantastic job of putting the conference together. And the lineup of speakers is just stellar.
It is truly phenomenal.
Yeah, they had
Craig Blomberg, Craig Evans,
and a number of other speakers that are just, I'm just like.
And the topics, too, are fantastic. So, this guy, Andy Steiger, too, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good looking.
Just brilliant speaker.
Why are you laughing, guys?
Guys?
Shameless.
Guys. Yeah, real humble too.
Yeah. So anyway, make sure you check us out. Go to apologeticscanadaconference.com. You can still get tickets there. And if you're listening to this from out east, definitely it's worth your time and money.
Yeah, and come say hi. We'd love to chat with you.
Absolutely. I think it was about last year, sometime last year, that I heard about this gentleman, I think up in Kelowna, possibly Prince George. I'm not sure where. I think maybe Prince George. And this gentleman was in the news because he insisted that he take the driver's license photo with this colander on his head. Do you guys remember that story?
No, I've never heard of
it. I recall it, yeah.
Yeah, and he...
So this happened in Canada, in British Columbia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
up north.
Interior.
All of a sudden, that's starting to not sound so weird.
Yeah, no, it's... Oh, yeah, I can see that.
So what this gentleman was arguing for was that this was his religious head covering that he must wear. And he identified himself as a devotee of Pastafarianism. That worships.
This sounds like a delicious dish at an Italian restaurant.
I appreciate the creativity that went into that name. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, Pastafarianism. And their object of worship is so affectionately named the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Do you guys know, did Dawkins, who's the one who first did that?
Oh, that was Dawkins for sure.
Was it Dawkins?
I think Dawkins might have taken that from somebody else.
Really?
Yeah.
There was
an actual philosopher, I think, who kind of coined that name.
I've never come across it in my readings except Dawkins.
Me as well, but I was just curious.
I thought he quipped that. I thought he just kind of came up with that during a...
I appreciate you distinguishing when you said a real philosopher.
Well, you know, like no disrespect to Richard Dawkins, but
he's a scientist.
He's a scientist. And I mean, he teaches at Oxford. You don't just teach at Oxford.
No,
obviously he's a brilliant biologist, but I think he's blind to certain philosophical presuppositions that he holds in like scientism, for example. So, but anyway, I'm not sure where exactly that comes from, but yeah, Flying Spaghetti Monster is a thing. But what's interesting is
maybe it'd be helpful just to explain to people how Dawkins was using it, though.
Right. Basically, the idea is that God is like the Flying Spaghetti Monster, right? It is something that's kind of so fantastic that it's so incredible that you can't possibly believe in it. So... other illustrations, other...
For example, too, like my kids, I have a son right now who's about to lose a tooth and he's pretty stoked about it because he knows he'll get some money under his pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some kids out there that we've met. Now, my kids don't believe in the tooth fairy, but we've met kids who do. And, you know, it happened just the other day where a parent, you know, mom was like, "No, shh, you know, don't tell Johnny, mm-hmm. you know, that the tooth fairy's not real because... you know, he actually believes in him." So in some ways, you got this idea where here's somebody who believes in the tooth fairy or the flying spaghetti monster, and then those mm-hmm. who are agnostic or atheist, more accurately, to the tooth fairy or the spaghetti monster.
And right. I think that ties into the fact that they'll say you can't prove a universal negative. So, you know, we can't prove that there's no spaghetti monster, flying spaghetti monster. So just like we can't prove that there's no God, but the belief in God is about as silly as believing in a flying spaghetti monster.
That's right. So, and then along with that, anything that's religious gets kind of wrapped into that, right?
Yeah.
Like anything religious, like, I mean, how can you prove that Jesus was both God and man? You know, that sort of a thing. These things are unprovable, unverifiable. And so it's kind of meaningless
sense of with 100% accuracy.
Or at least you can't scientifically prove it, right? So again, it kind of betrays a little bit of that scientistic attitude, right? But what's interesting is that just recently, I'm going to read quickly from Religion News Service, this article is titled, "Court to Spaghetti, You're Not a God." Now, this was written on April 13th. Just a few days ago. And this is what it says. It's not a very long article, so I'm just going to read right through it, and we can start commenting on it as we go. A federal court has ruled that the flying spaghetti monster, referred to as his flying noodliness by fans and followers, is not, alas, the object of a real religion. I already like this article at this point.
Yeah, yeah. A smile comes to my face. I can't help it.
Same.
In a 16-page decision, the U.S. District Court of Nebraska ruled on April 12th that Pastafarianism is satire, not sacred, and that anyone who thinks it is a religion has made an error of basic reading comprehension. Basic reading comprehension
now, this
is in quotes.
And what they're talking about here is clearly when Dawkins refers to the flying spaghetti monster, he's doing so sarcastically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in jest.
In jest, right. Quote, this is not a question of theology, end quote. The ruling reads in part, quote, the FSM, short for Flying Spaghetti Monster, the FSM gospel is plainly a work of satire meant to entertain while making a pointed political statement. To read it as religious doctrine would be little different from grounding a religious exercise on any other work of fiction, end quote. The Tuesday ruling came in response to a prisoner's request to have Pastafarianism recognized as his religion, which would entitle him to Pastafarian literature and trappings. For example, Pastafarians sometimes wear colanders on their heads. The Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster maintains a website where it offers ordinations rather in the church for $25.
Nice.
Quote, some claim that the church is purely a thought experiment or a satire, end quote, the church's website says. Quote, these people are mistaken. The Church of FSM, or Flying Spaghetti Monster, is legit and backed by hard science. Anything that comes across as humor or satire is purely coincidental, end quote. Pastafarianism was created in 2005 as a means of protesting Kansas State Board of Education's decision to include, quote, intelligent design, end quote, the notion that the universe is so complex it must be the work of some unknown designer in its science curriculum. There are Pastafarian groups around the world that frequently gather for events involving pasta, meatballs, and alcohol. Some have won the right to wear colanders on their heads for driver's licenses and other government-issued identification. That's the article.
That's unbelievable. I had no idea, by the way, about this, besides the flying spaghetti monster, you know,
that people are taking it that
would make a religion out of it. Am I surprised? No. I mean, the world's full of interesting and colorful people.
Was it last week we spoke about the cat or dragon girl, or dragon guy and cat girl?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple things in there, though, that I think are interesting and noteworthy. One of the things that's in there that caught my attention was that this is an inmate that's doing this. Mm-hmm. And the reason that caught my attention is the time that I've spent speaking in prisons. And
That's a very important thing to mention. He's been speaking in prisons. I know. He's been telling us that he's been going to prison. I'm like,
that's
what
one
have
of my
been
favorite.
Doing?
That's one of my favorite jokes. Like, I'll often post on social media. Well, going to prison. Or I've had a couple on there where it's great. It gets quite a few people tuned in, like, what on earth? Why is Steyer going to prison again? These opportunities to speak in these, you know, different prisons and meeting with the different chaplains there. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has come out about that I find really disturbing, mm-hmm. most people don't know about, is that, you know, Islam, people who follow Islam in prison or convert in prison is pretty significant.
I've been reading some stuff about that too lately. It's been like the numbers are skyrocketing.
Yeah, and there's a specific reason that the numbers are skyrocketing. It directly correlates with this article. And that is that certain religions get better food than other religions. Mm. If you identify as a Muslim, for example, you will get food that is, you know, cooked or is made in a way that is kosher with that religion.
Isn't that halal?
Halal.
Yeah.
That's right. And so that means on average, it can be anywhere between double to triple the amount of money will be spent on the food for that given religion than another. Now, the Jewish religion, they have the highest amount of money that's spent on making their food kosher. Mm. Now, from the prisons I've been in, they're pretty strict on trying to figure out whether or not they're actually a Jew or not, because of this problem with people going, okay, I'm going to identify as a Jew. I mean, if you're going to be spending, six times the amount on that meal than mine, I mean, well, then that sounds fantastic to me.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that when money is involved, all of a sudden truth and reality become a big deal to the government, right?
I know, right?
Like, I can identify as a female and the government's just, all right, that's all good, right? Hey, do you want your own bathroom? But if you're an inmate and you want to identify as a different religion, then it's like investigation and all of that. I find that bizarre.
So right now what we're having is we're seeing a lot of inmates turning to Islam, and from everything that I've seen, a lot of it has to do with the kind of food they're getting. So it's not surprising to me then that you'll see an article like this where here somebody wants to turn to Pastafarianism, right? Especially in prison, because I don't want to eat that nasty prison food anymore, and I need to follow some sort of religion that gives me a little bit better food. And so, so on the one level, I think that's interesting. The other thing that I think is interesting about the article is that there is a real misunderstanding with regards to what we mean when we're talking about God, and specifically when we're arguing for God. This is something that you see quite often with atheist groups, right?
Which, by the way, is interesting, because if you were to talk to any one of these devotees of Flying Spaghetti Monster, the maybe charade is too strong of a word, but if you were to actually have an honest conversation about God, I think you would find that most of these guys are actually atheists or agnostics. They don't actually really hold to the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Oh, that was just an assumption I had.
Yeah, same here.
I thought there's no way they actually believe this.
So I was very pleased to see that, this district court ruling was very commonsensical, right? Obviously, this is satire.
But
right?
The problem is there's a lot of atheist groups and people that would just think, well, religion is absolutely silly and belief in God is nonsense, like this Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Exactly. See? So the correlation is that if this is satire, then Christianity, so is Islam, so is
If this is fiction, then everything else is too.
Yeah.
Which I think they would have to make a positive case for. And go through every religion or something like that. I think that'd be really tough. But I find that it's really interesting, because often atheists, in relation to this, they'll say something like, well, yes, you're atheist with respect to millions of other gods. Well, we just go one god more.
Now, interestingly enough, back in ancient times, the Romans did in fact call Christians atheists.
Because Christians didn't believe in, Jupiter or Diana or whatever.
But let's talk about that for a moment. Okay, what is the fallacy that they're making here? I think we need to get at that. And why don't we believe in these other gods? Why don't we believe in Jupiter and whatever Greek god you want to name, or sorry, Roman or Greek with Zeus or whatever it might be?
Yeah, for me, the Kalam cosmological argument has been really helpful in weeding out a lot of different kinds of worldviews. So, for example, I borrow this from John Jiroge from RZIM. He once mentioned that you can broadly categorize different worldviews into three categories. One is the kind of view that says there is only the world. So that would include worldviews like atheism and naturalism, that sort of a thing. Another is there is only God. So that's pantheistic religions like Buddhism, Hinduism, even Taoism. And then the kind of a worldview that says
you have to be really nuanced, by the way, when you're talking about God on those worldviews.
Right, because it's not the kind of transcendent personal creator,
yeah.
Right?
We're talking about an impersonal force.
So even there,
it's a Star Wars understanding of God.
May the force be with you sort of a thing, right?
Yeah, honestly, without jest.
And then the third worldview says there are God and the world. So that would include Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and possibly Zoroastrianism, that sort of a thing. So if what helps me is that if Kalam's cosmological argument is true, then it actually weeds out the first two. So the Kalam cosmological argument, for those of you who are not very familiar with it, it has basically three steps. Step one, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Step two, the universe began to exist. And therefore, step three, the universe has a cause. Now, if the universe had a cause, if the conclusion is true, that rules out atheism, naturalism, that sort of thing, the worldviews that say there's only the world.
It, you have to understand, too, this means that you can't have an open, a closed universe, which right. is the premise, the assumption that those worldviews work off of, mm-hmm. is that the physical world is all that exists. Mm-hmm. What can be known can be, you know, scientifically tested, and mm-hmm. and that's all that there is. But if yeah. the universe was created, that implies that there's something beyond the universe
right.
that created it.
Yeah.
And that's then the implications being you no longer have a closed universe.
Right. It's an open universe. And that also has implications for pantheistic religions like Buddhism and Hinduism, because this would suggest then that God and the world are separate, like two distinct beings.
That's right.
So it leaves you with the third one. Now when,
there's something else, too, just to highlight it with that, mm-hmm. Steve, that I think is important for listeners to understand, and that is I think the Kalam is a great place to start because it starts to highlight what we mean about God. And I think that's an important key that we're talking about here. Like, what do we mean when we talk about God?
Mm-hmm.
I think, Anselm's ontological argument is helpful because
right.
that gives us a kind of a definition of God when we say that God is that which none greater can be conceived.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has some implications because when we say that the universe has a cause.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to ask, well, what's the cause of the universe? Now, in a lot of these polytheistic religions, if it's Greek or Roman or whatever it might mm-hmm. be, you can't have a polytheistic religion in that sense because ultimately there is this hierarchy. You have mm-hmm. one God that would be the creator mm-hmm. of everything. I mean, because what you have in these polytheistic religions is different gods that are in charge of different aspects of the world.
And they're basically like superheroes, right? Like one
right.
of them's really fast and one of them's really yeah. good looking.
Or
and
one of them's in charge of lightning.
Yeah.
One of them's
yeah.
in charge of birth. You know, one of them's yeah. in charge of, you know, rain. But here we're talking, no, but there's a God who created everything. Mm-hmm.
See, yeah, I think that's the key thing, right? I think the error that a lot of our atheist and agnostic friends make here is a category error, because what we mean by God, the two definitions are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like these gods, that polytheistic gods that we're talking about here, they're physical beings. They're just, mm-hmm. they're part of the universe. They're within the universe. Whereas the
that's
kind
right.
of God that we're talking about in monotheistic traditions is a God that's transcendent. He's the kind of God that can exist outside of space and time even.
That's right.
These polytheistic gods, they can't do that.
And really, they were founded on an Aristotelian understanding of the eternal universe.
Mm-hmm.
So this wasn't even something that was necessarily on their minds. So now here you've got this, you know, Judeo-Christian God mm-hmm. that, you know, Genesis 1:1 created the universe, that, you know, brought the cosmos into existence.
Which was a very controversial thing.
Yeah,
to
I
say.
Mean, that's a very odd idea. I mean, mm. it's separate, it puts God outside of the created order, and now he stands above not just all of creation, but in philosophy or, you know, in our understanding, he stands above all other beings.
Mm-hmm. I think in the church, though, we haven't done ourselves any favors by treating God as if he's there to solve our problems. Right. And to and, you know, sort of we treat him as if he is, you know, a member of the pantheon or exists to serve us in some way. Right.
Well, in many ways, this was a part of the Enlightenment is, that, you know, you had two choices as people began to pledge allegiance to scientism.
Yeah.
Either you're going to hold to deism, which, you know, Voltaire and others tried to do, you know, or you're going to have to get rid of God entirely. And so, you know, we live in a secular world that's decided just let's just get rid of God entirely. You know, mm-hmm. Voltaire's project just that's just not going to work out. You can't. Oddly enough, you're right though, Chris. We got people in our culture today that hold to what I believe it was Christian Smith called moralistic therapeutic deism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, God is just this moral character that exists, you know, somewhere. He's deistic. He's far removed, but he's close enough that he gives you what you need. you know, and
to get through the day or whatever. Yeah.
And this is a really flawed understanding of what we mean when we talk about God. So that's why I like to go back to that idea that we're talking about that which none greater can be conceived.
Yeah.
And this sets us in a trajectory then. It says, okay, then, what kind of things, given like such as the Kalam cosmological argument, what can we begin to deduce would be characteristics of who this God would be?
Yeah, if you... I start with at the definition of the universe, and by universe, we typically mean time, space, and everything within it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if God created all of that, that means he has to be able to transcend all of those things, including time and space. So if he is spaceless, he is immaterial, right? Because material things require space.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, he is timeless, and if he's timeless, he's also changeless because change requires time.
Mm-hmm.
And we would also argue that he has to be a personal being.
Well, and before we get to that one, though, we'd also say that he'd be incredibly powerful,
right, to be able to create something like the universe.
And then now to get into this personal one, I mean, the very act of creating requires volition,
right.
And now we're starting to get into characteristics of personhood. Sorry to cut you off, Steve.
No, that's totally. That's sort of where I was headed too, because if God doesn't have free will, then I just don't see how we can go from a state of no creation to creation. Whether it, I mean, we kind of have to remove time out of this equation for now, but. How does that happen if God doesn't choose to create?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's at this juncture that you'll often have, you know, skeptics that will jump in and say, okay, I see what you're doing there, you know, with the whole God thing. However, what created God?
Right.
Right? Now,
this is where William Lane, Dr. Craig's head explodes. When...
No, this is where he brings out the paddle.
Yeah,
and proceeds to give some spankings. Now, and this is
intellectual
where
spankings.
This is where I come back to the Kalam cosmological argument and remind the listener. Okay, well, how did we start on this journey? We said whatever begins to exist has a cause.
Right.
Now, God, by his very nature, we're saying did not begin to exist, that God is eternal. He is an uncaused cause.
Yeah.
And so in that being the case, he doesn't need an explanation for his existence.
He needs an explanation for his existence, but we would just say that it's within his nature, right?
Yes.
His metaphysical necessity. But I think what you mean by that is that, you know, he didn't come from anywhere. Like, he doesn't need a prior cause, logical or chronological, that gave rise to his existence, I think is what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing there is often our friends then push back, saying, well, that's special pleading. And I think what our friends don't seem to understand is that actually this was deduced from what kind of cause this might be, just from the argument. If this being can exist without time and space, right? Because he is the creator of time and space, he has to be able to exist without it. And so that's how we got to this kind of a being, and we're not making any special pleading. Now, the interesting thing is, most atheists who hold to some kind of an eternal universe, they have no issue positing some kind of an eternal entity. If it's the universe, they have no problem
with it. They'll often point to, you know, the multiverse or something like that, because they know that this universe has, to our knowledge, they try to get out of it, that it has a cause, or a beginning point.
Yeah, which could be argued then, you know, you could kind of turn it on our friends too, right? Saying, well, that sounds like what you called special pleading earlier.
Right.
Right, so that's...
Because I find it fascinating that when, you know, the Aristotelian model of an eternal universe, nobody was balking over that, but now all of a sudden if we posit an eternal God, that can't be. And that, to me, sounds like special pleading. Mm-hmm. I think that these are important things for people to understand with regards to how we're nuancing. What do we mean by God? We're not talking about these mm-hmm. mythical figures, these, you know, flying spaghetti monsters mm-hmm. that clearly philosophically don't mm-hmm. stand muster. Like what we're talking about when we're talking about God mm-hmm. is, you know, what do we actually have good reason to believe is the fundamental cause of life, of the universe, of existence itself. You know, as we begin to use rules of reliable thought, what do they begin to describe of ultimate reality? Mm-hmm. And this is ultimately what we're talking about with regards to God. Now, that can only get you so far. And when we're talking about God, we're talking about in very generic terms. What do we mean when we're talking about God? It can get us to a very powerful, personal, spaceless, timeless, you know,
immaterial, changeless
being. But then this is where Christianity steps in and takes us deeper and says, yeah, but now you can know who this God is because God made himself known. And,
yeah.
And this is why I'm a Christian.
Well, that's a very good note to end on. So, I hope it was helpful to you listeners. Now you know what to talk about when Pastafarianism comes along. And I hope this was helpful in being equipped. You are being equipped. Thank you for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more.